Hey Fixers, I'm Dr. Jeanette Benegas, one of the co-founders of FixSLP. Our platform exists to discuss the biggest challenges that are currently holding back the field of speech-language pathology. We present the issues with facts and invite you to be a part of joining this movement to make things better one conversation at a time. So let's fix SLP. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Fix SLP. This is Jeanette. If you are a new listener, I'm so happy to have you here. We recently went through a transition where I took over everything for the movement and the podcast had to be reassigned to my Apple ID. And when that happened, I watched a lot of followers disappear. It was also the same time that Google stopped Google Play. So that could have played into this a little bit, but in the last week or two, we've lost a lot of listeners, but I posted about it on social media and oh my word, did you guys respond? So thank you for that. I'm so appreciative. So now I just need to unleash all of you to go give us a 5-star rating and good review and we'll be all set. Today, we have our secret weapon back. Preston Lewis is here to do part two with me. I'm so excited to have him. And really, I think what this is going to turn into is Preston just hosting this podcast, and I'll be here sipping my coffee, just shaking my head yes and agreeing.
No pressure.
Agreeing at times. So we're going to jump right into it. Today, man, this happened last week, Preston. Today, we, as in I, and then I sent it to you, got a message from a fearless fixer, Elizabeth Nielsen, who has been working with NPR in Illinois, I think, for a couple months. This wasn't something that was a quick process. She reached out to me when it first started. I was interviewed weeks ago for it. So this was a long process. I've invited Elizabeth to come on the podcast to talk about the process, but the story came out. It's out. There's a story. And by the time you're listening to this, it will have been posted at fixslp.com and on our social media. But there's also some little audio clips that are fun to listen to. So what did you think, Preston?
I thought it told the story of the SLP who's just having everything pushed back against them, but still just loves what we do. And those are the folks out there that Elizabeth Nielsen, the Audrey Myers, these are the stories we really need to be hearing about therapists that are pushing so hard to make it in this field right now, Jeanette. It's exciting, it's inspiring, but also I had a little bit of sadness because I thought about a lot of the therapists, I know you know a lot of them as well, that have left the field or gone and reduced their hours or what they're doing in their capacity. And so I felt like these are people that are really pushing forward. And I was so proud of Elizabeth. She is fierce. And What a great story. Public radio is the venue to tell this story right now from that audio perspective. I wanted to hear more of the horses in the background because I know she does a lot of equestrian work. I was thrilled. This is great news for the profession. And I'm excited. This is great. This is the kind of news that we need, I think, on a weekly and monthly basis to keep coming to tell our story so that we're pushing back against a lot of things. And wow, she's still so positive, but sometimes I get frustrated because I think about we're pushing back against the government, the big contract companies, the corporate rehab folks, the nursing home owners, the administrators, the superintendents, the teachers. And that's bad enough. We're pushing it back against our national association.
Yeah.
It's tiresome, but wow, I'm so happy this story was told.
Me too. And so early, I've been thinking a lot about when I'm going to post content. So here it is verbally, everyone. I said this when ASHA announced that they raised their rates. I said, they gave us a warning. This is not going to be a surprise when the renewal letter comes in September, when it comes again in October, when everyone has to start paying in November, when that deadline comes in December, when you don't pay and you wait, because we all know we can through January 31st, it's not going to be a surprise. And I said, they gave us a warning. We need to do the work now. The time to do the work is not in September. The time to do the work is right now, so we can undo some of this. So when it's time to renew, we have the option not to if we don't want to. And it's stories like these. It's getting the stories out in public It's the work that they're doing in Michigan and in South Carolina. It's that work that people are doing right now that are going to make the difference 8 months from now.
This week, I contacted the Arkansas Medicaid office because even though we got a positive response during our initial outreach, what is that follow-up response? I want to see some of those regulations that are being tweaked, and there's an email chain going back and forth right now. So I know that there are other folks that are in different states working on this, and some of them may not be seeing some of the pushback that some states are seeing. If you've had that positive communication with the state Medicaid office or somebody within a state insurance body, if it's right now is the time that you need to follow up. And it's I can't instill that more, that we just have to stay on top of it, especially if we continue on this state by state approach, which I love, because early on I know there was conversation, people said, what about a class action lawsuit? And yes, for some organizations that has had a big change. It can move a lot of things forward, but it goes so slowly. And for us, I really feel like there is that option right now to go at this in some of our states and fix this right now, hence our name, rather than get lawyers involved and wait many, many, many years. And I think right now also, there is a quiet, sort of a calm at ASHA where they don't want to talk about fixed SLPs. They're use some terms about us that are not always positive.
They literally won't even say our name in meetings. And I think it's because they're afraid of slander and libel, but that's just my own opinion. But yeah, they will not say, they used to say my first name and the co-founder's first name. We've heard that a couple times, but now it's just like, we will not mention them.
You will who not be spoken of. Yes. I think also there's a good chance that they have got legal counsel. They certainly have a lot more resources and money than we do, where they have been advised if this does go to a class action type scenario, I would be very nervous if I had some of those lobbying letters that were still going out that we've seen in the past, where it looks like, even though there's a lot of folks in the pro ASHA crowd that will say, well, this is voluntary until you show them the information, and then suddenly they get very quiet. But if they were to continue down that path, I think that that would raise the likelihood that in a class action suit, that would come up as evidence. So all the more reason now is the time to reach out to your state organizations, talk about your state licensing board and what that means and how it is, in many cases, greater or at least equivalent to the ASHA CCC, which is a right to work instrument, or at least it's been used as such. People say, well, what does that mean? That means that if you don't have that, then your entry into the SLP marketplace is limited, if not even closed. And that's a very tricky thing for a nonprofit third party organization to hold over a profession. It doesn't really happen, certainly not in PT and OT. It begs the question, if ASHA decided to raise the CCC to $500 a year, how far would it go until somebody did say, enough's enough? Fortunately, I think there are enough SLPs out there that follow one of those quotes that I love, which questioning the status quo is the heartbeat of progress. We need to have those pushing forward right now to question what that is. But I also encourage those folks at ASHA who don't want to recognize us, look at your own standards right now. If you want to raise the CCC at some point, do that. Make it voluntary. Continue to do what you're doing, but uncouple this thing. Somewhere long ago, Jeanette, they decided this was going to be a wellspring for their revenue. And some other organizations walked away from that sort of thing, like OT does with the OTR. I would encourage them to do that. There's a way they can do it. But right now, this silence, I think this is our call to action.
Yeah, it's the time to get into it, get into that silence and make a change. Because if they're not going to talk, then we need to do the hard work.
The people that do talk, wow, some of the fixed SLP haters out there, and some of the people that are just ardently sycophantic about ASHA, to where, like you said, the ASHA Kool-Aid drinking, I've encountered that. I was one of those people that decided to mix and mingle on some of those ASHA Facebook posts just to invite some conversation, to invite some questions. And some people don't like questions, Jeanette.
No, they don't. And there is a lot of hate.
Comes from all sides, but that's it. It strikes me when there are a lot of passionate folks out there who are not going to be 100% accurate about every piece of information. We've seen that since the rate increase. Some people will say, well, they're paying all the board members, which is not true. They pay their executives. But as soon as somebody makes one misstatement or somebody who's got a lot of fire and has just joined the conversation makes one error, then the Kool-Aid crowd comes in and they want to discredit the whole movement. All of Fix SLP is one big disinformation campaign. And I look at the website, Jeanette, and I look at the work that has gone into compiling state laws and state regulations and information in this profession, in sometimes not even about ASHA. And I think, wow, you're just going to throw the whole thing out? To me, it seems incredibly insecure.
And it's surprising to me that people are expecting perfection from the information that comes from this movement, because number one, no one is perfect. This is a grassroots effort that is coming from now one person, formerly two, who have full-time jobs and families and other responsibilities and are really doing this to help. The movement is committed to accuracy. If there are inaccuracies, it's corrected, it's put on the website. But I don't understand why there's this expectation of perfection for the information that comes out when it can just be corrected. I haven't understood that from the beginning, that why is it this movement that must be perfect?
Sometimes I wonder, is it a threat to? I try to get into the psychology of those that are pushing back against us. Is that, like I said, is it insecurity? Is it just because we're outsiders? I would love for somebody who's got that mentality to come on the pod, talk to us. That's the thing that I've said. And I've had some very professional, very intelligent people come back and talk to me about ASHAPAC and how that's different, and people make optional donations to that. And so questioning the lobbying is maybe not necessarily fair, which that's a whole other debate. But when I have tried to come back around and have conversations with some of these folks on an individual basis, it's often met with silence. So that's the thing that I think disappoints me, not just with some of this, not just with Asha and their silence, but some of their most ardent supporters. It just seems to be a case of shoot the messenger. The people that are carrying this message, they must be wrong. They must be heretics, and we're going to burn them at the stake. And I don't understand it. I want them to come on. I want them to reach out, but instead, it seems often like this kind of sniping thing, which sort of I think tends to our worst social media instincts. And some people say, well, it's wrong that you're getting on Asha and on their Facebook page and you're running them down. I think that it's good to invite different voices, and it's good to ask questions, particularly when so much, at least, almost 80% plus of your revenue is coming from a single product that you have lobbied to make it a right to work instrument as many states as you can. And that is your main source of income. I'm sorry, I question that. I really just think that are you willing to modernize your business model to where you have voluntary people in an organization, because that's where you get people who are truly engaged. And they're not like the therapist that I was for over a decade, who my only relationship was this crummy newsletter that I got. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to throw shade on the leader, but I wanted to like this periodical. I would open it and I would look in it and think, well, I'm a sniff SLP. Maybe there's something in here about a certain treatment, actual therapy that I can provide rather than just raw data. I didn't feel it. I never felt that welcoming presence. I never felt like there was something that I could chew on. So if you can't hook your audience in something like that, then find other things that you feel like you can appeal to the working class SLP. I want those messages that go to the Elizabeth Nielsens and get them engaged. But right now, it just feels like we're going to stick with our pro ASHA people and we're going to ride along with them. And anybody else who's not there, we're just going to ignore them, pay no attention to them whatsoever.
Well, I do just have to insert, Preston, you obviously weren't reading the leader closely enough in the last decade,
Oh,
because
yeah.
I was highlighted twice, once with a large article about
Okay.
spaced retrieval that you could have learned a lot from.
Yeah.
You need to
Yeah.
circle
Oh,
back.
boy.
Circle
Space.
back.
Based retrieval. Okay. Okay.
Okay. So
Okay.
I want to add this in as we're talking about accuracy and being correct or incorrect. Before we get too far off of that NPR report, there is actually at least one little piece of misinformation that I picked up on, which was when the reporter said that Asha lobbies for supervisors to have the CCC. And this wasn't our initiative. I was interviewed, but that was not information that I provided. I have a hard time believing SLP said that, although they could have. I just think that particular reporter may have misunderstood a little bit. So I don't want people thinking that Fix SLP has said Asha lobbies to require supervisors have the CCC. They don't lobby for that. They just require it. In order to purchase the CCC, you have to have been supervised with someone who has the CCC. So I just want to put that out there. I haven't
Going
seen
back,
lobbying efforts for that particular thing.
to that story, the ex-broadcaster in me noticed this right away. At the end of the story, it had a very clunky ending. Did you notice that, Jeanette?
Yes.
And that's not a, I'm not putting down the journalist at all. I thought they did a nice job. But I noticed at the end, Asha comes up at the very end of the story, which is when most reporters would say, the American Speech Hearing Language Association, and then offer a chance for something to be said, a quote. I would be stunned if they hadn't contacted Asha for some sort of comment.
They
And
did.
once again, silence. Go ahead. Maybe
No.
you know more about this.
No, they did, and there was a quote. Did you read it?
No, I did. I
No.
listened to it because I was in the car.
So what you heard is different than what was written.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the audio was very clunky.
It
They
was.
did reach out to Asha, and it was recently. And so I think that that was a late add-in.
Don't bury the lead, Jeanette. Tell me, what was this? I want to know what the oracle from on high has said. Okay, yeah. In a statement to WNIJ, an Asha spokesperson said they don't lobby to make their certification required, just to offer it as a pathway to licensure. Oh, boy.
And then that author dropped the mic and was like, what's the statement? What's that letter to Nevada?
Yeah. And there
And
are
then
more than
Nevada
just,
did
yeah.
require the CCC for licensure. So a lot of things could have gone on. It probably wasn't the only effort from Asha that made that happen, but Asha was certainly a part of it.
They sent the letter to the state licensing board.
I know.
It doesn't get any more complicit than that. They were in the library with the lead pipe with Professor Plum.
And
What more do you need?
I mean that and that's the narrative too, as we talk about this misinformation and these people who are pro Asha. Somebody just said this to me this week on Facebook. In an academic group, there somebody asked a very reasonable question about this platform and how to communicate with students. And of course, I was reading along, and then I did jump in, and I was very professional. And I answered in my own way, and people started giving me, I think, very well-meaning advice, even though it was clear that they have not followed our content or movement at all. They've simply operated off the rumors instead of doing their own research. But one person said to me, this is, I'm just going to read it.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
The other thing you could do is aim for the entity that matters. If you want states to not require the CCC, work with the states and not against Asha. Your state legislators live in your community. Your kids play soccer together. You go to the same dry cleaner. You talk to them, not a lobbyist who will be voting for them. Help the right regulators to clearly specify when the CCC is needed and when it isn't. When you start doing progressive and positive things, you might be perceived as wanting to fix SLP and not hurt Asha. So I jumped in and I said, that's exactly what we're doing. What my exact response was, it's exactly what's happening in multiple states. The person came back and said, I know you're trying, but when you state that you want to make the CCC optional, that's spreading false information because it is optional.
No.
And that's where my little spidey senses started to tingle. So I looked this person up, and sure enough, this person has deep roots in Asha, has been volunteering for years, has held multiple positions, doing multiple things. And
And
has
she's
it.
obviously driving a DeLorean because she's gone back in time and has no idea what we have been saying for the last several months.
So I just said in 11 states, almost all SLPs will disagree with you. And SLPs in Nevada can't get licensed without it at all. No response.
None. No, and that's, you won't get any at that point. And I know that we get all sorts of grief over any misstatement whatsoever, any slightest inkling of mistake, and then it's totally discrediting. But it strikes me also is that we are having a very fundamental debate about this. And you bring out that Nevada letter where Asha openly lobbies the state licensing board, Nevada. There is usually a just absolute deafening silence that occurs. But also, we haven't really even talked about all of the private sector jobs that mention right up front in their job description, the CCC.
Yeah.
So this thing has seeped its way not only in the public sphere with Medicaid and several state agencies where they require it, but also into the private sector. So yes, it exists. And to act like this thing is just some innocent little, Girl Scout badge out there, I just don't get it. I don't see the sense in denial. I would much rather have a conversation that says, okay, yes, maybe we can start moving to a different point, and maybe we can even raise some of the requirements to make the CCC a bit more prestigious, where it goes above most of the state licenses and has an added value. Okay, great. Let's have that conversation. I would love to have that visit. But right now, it's just utter denial.
Yeah.
I feel gaslighted.
That's what's happening. It's very, they're very wordsmithy. They're very creative when they do respond. So I suspect the silence will continue.
I'm really excited about the students that are out there right now because this is the message that was lacking during my time in college. I never felt like I was part of that group. All we heard was that Asha was like those movies where the Greek gods are controlling the figures and they're moving around like pieces in the chessboard and they're high atop Mount Olympus and their ivory tower and they know what's best for this profession. And from day one, the skeptic in me was just sort of saying, really? Okay. I don't know, Jeanette. It just I think now about those students that are changing the way that they're core curriculum has worked, and they're now advocating for minority issues or LGBTQ initiatives out there. And I'm excited for them, but I think that they are going to be a huge part of this change over the
Yeah,
next decade.
they are going to be the change. I've spoken in a few platforms for grad students since Fix SLP started. My own students that I've had, I have said the seeds are being planted right now for what is going to happen 10 years from now or 15 years from now. We're starting this. But it's your generation who's going to take this to the finish line because this is going to take years to unravel and untangle and undo. And I'm so excited because we're already seeing more progress than I ever thought we would this quickly. Stuff is happening,
Right.
but it's still going to take a really long time. And so it's these students now, they're listening. They're out there. They might not be listening to this podcast, but they're hearing rumblings. And somebody else in that same thread that I was mentioning earlier said something like, I talk about this issue and Fix SLP with my students, but I bring it up as a critical thinking activity and, not running to the wrong person for answers. Clearly, like, not in support of Fix SLP. But as I thought about it, I thought, bingo, thank you. Because you don't agree with Fix SLP clearly, but you're encouraging your students to be critical thinkers. And they might tend to agree with you right now because you're their professor and you've gained their respect and you've built some rapport, but they are going to get out in the real world and they will see what's going on and they will come to their own conclusion eventually. So thank you for encouraging them to think critically and allowing them room to make their own decisions because I suspect they're coming to this side of the field.
You have to think, I mean, the definition of an alumnus is going to be so much different over the next decade because of virtual learning, because of the pandemic, but also because of the way the field is changing. And if you aren't asking those questions, then you are stuck, I think, in that. And I feel guilty because I was part of this cohort that has seen the wages and the reimbursements stall out. I think I was part of that cohort that originally just sort of took it for granted and said, well, I guess we just have to pay this money every year because I guess this is like a license when it's not. And wow, now we've had our eyes opened. And I guess I'm glad that we're on the sort of beginning of this, but I really wish that it could have happened sooner. And that makes me perhaps have some regret, but I'm glad we're here.
Me too. Me too. And it might have come from you, but someone recently asked, well, what's the motivation? What's the motivation for doing this? What's the agenda? And for me, the motivation and agenda is to make things better. And even if that's not something that motivates you, we all have different personalities. And I like to take it back to the Enneagram. We all have different Enneagram types. And advocacy is part of who I am. It is part of my personality, and it has been forever. I'm not someone who likes the establishment or to be a part of controlled organizations. So I was in a sorority for 1 year, and when I was in that sorority for 1 year, I was the philanthropy chair. It's just it's what I do. I took my family to this little gated community to watch the eclipse because it was in the path of totality. And I was in that community every summer through a church organization that I grew up being involved in. And I was the Youth Service Fund representative. And our tagline was money raised by youth, spent by youth to benefit youth. That's what we did. And so I would help plan these huge, huge events to raise money to give to other kids who needed money for whatever. It was a really cool thing to be a part of. I've been doing this stuff my whole life. It only makes sense that I do this for the profession that I love. And I'm not raising money, but it's still the same kind of thing. I'm helping to make a change where a change is needed, and I was given a voice and a set of strengths that I can put to good use here. And that's it. And the motivation is it's fun for me to watch this stuff happen. It's fun to see peers that I don't even know winning, getting on NPR, getting a letter with draft legislation from their representative. He's having their boss, their HR department say, sure, we'll take this off the job description. That's fun.
It's change. It's
Yeah.
something different. It's not doing the same thing over and over again and, getting the same year after year, the lack of reimbursements, the squeezing of productivity, feeling other professions butt up against us. It's just something different. This is defining and staking our own claim. I think for me, Jeanette, motivation goes back to the patient. I feel such profound sadness when I think about I've got about half a dozen SLP friends, a couple who have just walked away from the profession altogether. One's in real estate now and doing great. I'm so thrilled for her. But others that have backed down to PRN positions, and some of them have made choices for family. I get that. But a lot of them left because it wasn't the same job that it was in the beginning, or the growth that was there just stopped. And I think about the patients that have been denied the services from some of the best SLPs that I knew. And it just breaks my heart. And I think, wow, what are we doing? Why, if we're losing some of our best people, then we as a profession are not growing like we should. That's my concern. It goes back to the patient. I don't know. Maybe that sounds hokey, but for me, that's where it all begins.
And I think each one of us has these different motivations that we're bringing into this, and it's all valuable and needed. And every effort is going to lead to those changes, I think. Just doing your little part, it all helps. It all helps. It doesn't need your motivation, doesn't need to be the same as my motivation. Just as long as we're here together doing this thing, I think it all works in the end. Doesn't matter. Doesn't it does do our motivations even matter? I mean, we're
Right.
fixing it. Who
We want to
cares
help.
what? Who cares?
I'm here to help.
Yeah. Yeah,
What can I
because
do?
that's
I
how
mean,
change is made.
besides paying $250 a year and getting a newsletter, what can I do? And I know I can hear it right now. Well, you could get on this committee or you could be part of this little webinar. Yeah, yip, yip, yahoo. That's great. I can have myself muted one more time being on a webinar because my question didn't really fit the topic or my question kind of went against the message of the day. I want to see those therapists that were like the ones mentioned in the public radio story being uplifted and sometimes just being honest that it's not all raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. There are some very dark things out there right now that SLPs are having to deal with day in and day out. Let's be honest about it. Let's be honest about what this profession is facing right now and not just huddle around this pack mentality that the people in Mount Olympus know what they're doing. And if we just keep paying our money and being good little stewards, then everything will work out because that has not been the case the past 10 years. Now, I know
Right.
people can look at some of the salary data and say, well, look, it has grown, in conjunction with compared to some other peer organizations. One thing I studied is from a data standpoint that did concern me a lot is that pay increases for the non-school SLPs in the last 10 years. That has been very, very dry. And
Yeah.
that's the profession that I work in. That's most of the colleagues that I've seen have left the profession. That doesn't mean that school SLPs have had, the day of wine and roses, but it does mean that there's something that's missing right now and we're getting squeezed. And
Yeah.
sure, there are national implications that go into that, but I don't see that honest conversation taking place to recognize that and say, how can we do this differently than we did 10 years ago? Because what we did 10 years ago isn't working.
Man, do I miss that money I used to make?
Well, I mean, that's the thing is that people say, well, it hasn't increased. It's not only that. Look at everything that has increased. There is that ocean of difference there, with an inflationary economy. And that, I think, more than anything, is what Asha really miscalculated. I get the information that was put out saying, well, we haven't asked for a rate increase in so many years. Yes, I understand that. But we are in an inflationary economy and our bottom line has not improved. And so yours needs to. And
Right.
people
Why?
have that reflexive response where they look at those executive salaries and they kind of scratch their head. And I drew some ire mentioning one of the executives by name who's in my state. It's a great audiologist, but I really don't see $290,000 of advocacy. This is a very excellent person. That's not to diminish them, but I certainly haven't seen that kind of growth in the profession that I'm working in as far as my colleagues and myself. And so it begs a lot of questions as to why are these increases really necessary if we're not looking at results.
Boom.
Can we put them with productivity?
We should. Yes.
Then beating over our heads. But I wanted to go back for a minute. You mentioned back in college, you were in a sorority. I really want to know more about this Jeanette that was back in college and kind of what that experience was like, because I have a feeling our experiences were quite different. Can I open that file?
The old Jeanette is my husband regrets every day that he doesn't know the old Jeanette. Let's just start there.
Okay. Do we need to have him on?
I was in college for a good time, not to learn or grow.
You're
I
really like telling on yourself.
remember I said last time, this is where I,
Self-incriminations.
yeah, this is where I self-incriminate. No, I'm very open about my life. And it's a joke too. So I started college when I was 16 years old. In the state of Ohio, they have a bill. It's called the Senate Bill 140. It used to be for juniors and seniors only, but my sophomore year, they were running a pilot program to see how students did if they entered as freshmen and sophomores. And so there was absolutely no criteria. All you had to do was sign up. I heard you get out of school to go to college and get some credits. And I was like, hell yeah, I'm there. So I started college when I was a sophomore in high school and went consistently all the way through my senior year. My senior year, I was in college full time. I only went to high school for band. I was a majorette, which was more of a dance line at our school, and yearbook. So that was my life. And so when I entered school, I had a year and a half of credits already done. And I was in between cohorts. So I had the cohort that was my own age, the same graduation year, and then the cohort ahead of me. And I had a really hard time initially making friends and fitting in, especially because I was in college for a good time. And if I went to class at all, I would show up in my pajamas and sleep. So sleep through class. I do not know how I got a degree with a fairly good GPA. I got into grad school. So, I offer a lot of mentorship to a lot of people, and that includes my friends. And so when these friends from grad school call me to like ask a question, it's often preceded with, "I can't believe you're the person I'm calling to ask advice
Oh,
for."
no.
And I'm like, "Hey, I had it right. I had a fun time." Grad school, however, I think I did it to myself. Professors maybe always didn't like me the most because was I showing up for class? Was I the most committed? I would have hated me as a professor now. I would have not been the favorite. I did enough work to get through with good grades. And a strength of mine has always been like book smart intelligence. I haven't had to study a lot or, that's been very easy for me, thankfully. Many other things come very difficult. Like, don't talk to me about numbers. So college, yeah. So college was rough in terms of getting through the program, being well received by my professors. Again, I did it to myself. I don't know. What do you want to know about the sorority? I got kicked out or I quit. It depends on who you ask.
I love that you were, I can just see you sending out letters and calling people and asking for, hey, we're having a party. Could you bring a free grill out there so we can cook hot dogs and burgers? I don't know. I can just see this. It's very visual to me. You want to
I
scrub
know that I always
that
had on
one?
a fabulous outfit, a lot of high
Yes.
heels. I was at the parties.
Okay.
I don't know how I'm still alive.
Fate. It protected you.
Yeah, literally.
Absolutely.
Yeah, grad school. Now, then in grad school, I became a live-in nanny. So I was a live-in nanny. I lived there for free and had a set number of hours, nannied for the kids, and then I would commute to grad school. And I don't know how I made it through grad school. I barely remember my campus. And it's not because I was partying and having a good time. It's because I was working so much. I was a waitress. I was a live-in nanny. And I was the church secretary and the youth coordinator of the youth group. When exactly was I going to class? Again, I don't know. But I made it through. I somehow graduated with a decent GPA.
I'm right though about one thing is that it was so different for both of us
Yeah.
because the high school part, now I can identify you were taking those college classes. I think if there was like a logo or like an item that I would have buried in the time capsule of my high school experience, it would have been one of those Motorola bag phones. Do you remember those? I don't know if you're
Yes.
old enough to remember that.
I think you're only 2 or 3 years older than me.
Okay. So yeah, they had those. And for the younger SLPs out there that don't remember these, they had these like little leatherette kind of bags that you would have a cell phone in that was long and you had to plug it in and with a cigarette lighter, analog phone. You might have had a minute plan that was 50 minutes on a good month if you were calling after 9 p.m. I had to carry one of these around because I was broadcasting my high school football team and basketball team's games. And that was how we broadcast back then, was we'd actually literally put this little cell phone, hook it into a microphone and a headset. I'm probably going to be radiated by some sort of wicked cancer later on, which I wonder about that sometimes. But this was high school version of me. And I was calling those ball games and going from city to city. And for me, that led into the, first college years, which was still like a job. I was just going on the road, flying to Nashville, Tennessee, or flying to, Denver to do a ball game for our basketball team, and a lot of fun. But as far as the work experiences and being a young sportscaster, but it really didn't inure me, or it didn't allow me to have that opportunity to have a college experience that was traditional, and that was kind of sad. But each to their own. I got it back in the last couple of years of college, but still did a lot of broadcasting. And then there was that pivot that I talked about on the last episode where I became a school speech therapy aide That was a lot of fun. It was a good opportunity to really interact with the first people that I would consider patients. Granted, I wasn't a billing SLP, but I was interacting with students in a middle school and elementary school. And that sort of born a love for this profession and the communication that went into it, that interaction with patients. But wow, grad school, Jeanette, my goodness. I had to post baccalaureate in, which that was okay. But once that admission happened, and I feel a little strange saying this because I'm a white male, but I went into a program that was predominantly female. In my cohort, I think I was the only male. I really felt, I'm going to be honest, I felt a lot of discrimination in grad school. I did.
Really?
I did.
Yeah.
And I think some of it for some of the professors was just not having dealt with a lot of male SLPs, especially ones that were maybe coming to the profession as a broadcast journalism major, but also maybe a little bit of resentment because some of the admission, I'm going to be honest, it may have been somewhat quota related. My GPA was good. I don't know that it was the best. I had a good, what was it, the GRE that we took to get in? Had a good GRE score, but then got into the program and encountered some really tough customer professors that were female. And I remember having a conversation with one where I had failed a couple of assignments and I was just having a really hard time. I would listen to see what it was she wanted for these assignments, write down all these details. And then something that she would have mentioned in passing was like the key thing she wanted on that assignment. And I would get an F. And finally, I met with her in her office and I said, look, I know I'm having trouble with this. Is it perhaps possible for you to provide a written handout of what some of the assignment expectations are? That may help me. And I will never forget sitting in her crummy little office. And she said, well, I'm not going to do that unless you go down to student services and get some sort of an accommodation for your disorder. My eyes about popped out of my head. And I was, since I post-baccalaureate into the field, I was in my late 20s and married. And I just wasn't going to take that. And I said, I'm sorry, that is very offensive. And from that day forward, it was a very animosity, there was a lot of animosity in that relationship. And then when the student placements came, my goodness, we all filled out, I don't know how it was in your program. You fill out some of your interests in the field, where it is you might like to have a student placement. I, of course, had no interest in school SLP work or pediatrics for that matter, but I understand we all have to have a broad experience. So I put down that I'm interested in SNF, rehab, VA, outpatient, hospital, all those. And I got about three school placements and about three pediatric placements. And I was going out of my mind. In fact, I think if it had not been for working at an adult habilitation center, one, they gave me one placement 2 days a week. Worked with a speech therapist who I still work with to this day. I'm going to use her name, Brooke Jeter, fantastic speech therapist. I think I would have washed out if it wasn't for that one placement. I'll tell one more story. I was at one of those public school placements, Jeanette. Would you believe I was accused of stealing articulation cards by my supervisor?
Jeez.
Yes. I'd already gotten a really negative review. I was having to go under an improvement plan with the same professor that thought I had a learning disorder and or had willingly or unwillingly diagnosed me with one, which I don't have. But anyway, I came into the office one day or at the school, and the speech therapist that was my supervisor there, she said, have you seen the TH articulation cards? And I said, no, I haven't. And she said, well, they're not here. And I said, well, have you looked over here where we keep them? And I started trying to look for them. And, I said, I don't see them here. And she said, well, are you sure you didn't have them? And I said, well, I think I had them 3 days ago when I worked with this patient, but I don't have them now. Well, they're not here. And I don't know what I'm going to do about it. And I felt terrible. And after you get asked something about three or four times where something is, what's the expectation, Jeanette? You're thinking, I'm being accused of stealing this. So I finally went to a different school speech therapist that would periodically rotate through that elementary school. And I asked her, I said, have you had these cards? And I think it turned out she had. And it came back to my supervisor that I had asked about them. And I said, well, I think I'm being accused of stealing them. Well, she called me in about 20 minutes later and just ran me up and down, said, how dare you do this? And she just, I felt at that time a bit of discrimination. I just felt like I don't know that I would be going through this same thing if I was like every other student up here, because I talked to my fellow students and they said, well, I've never had that happen. And she called that professor, the one that thought I had the learning disorder. She showed up within 30 minutes. And they came up there and both just took me down to size. And so when I finally got out of that program, Jeanette, and fortunately, I didn't wash out. I just decided to put one foot in front of the other. But I remember visiting with the vice chancellor or the dean of the department. I remember visiting with the department chair and putting forth concerns and grievances, and they were all ignored.
Yeah,
There was
of course
just
they
like,
were.
no, this is all in your head. There's
Yeah.
nothing here. Run along. And that's where we mentioned it earlier. When I hear about those students now that are pushing for different things, and some of them are a little bit beyond me right now. I must admit, I'm a enthusiastic person about some of the LGBTQ stuff out there, but I will openly admit I don't know everything about it. But I do see those accommodations taking place now and some of that culture change happening. And I think, wow, well, I'm glad that's different because it was not different when I was there.
Yeah. There is some exciting stuff. I always love to shout out great work when I see it. My friend AC Goldberg owns the Credits Institute, and he does a bang up job. One of the things that he offers is like a 62-hour course that my employer had purchased for us, and he helps you bring diversity into your courses, and he'll look at your syllabus, and there's all these assignments. And so there are resources out there for educators to be learning if they're open to it, and his Credits Institute sells some of that. So yes, yeah. It's interesting. I always found that non-traditional students were my best students. The older ones, the ones who are married with kids, you probably would have been my favorite.
Well, we had, there were positive experiences. I remember one of the cool things was in the post-baccalaureate, I went to a different college there. I had the speech therapist in Arkansas that she's now passed. She was really a very kind soul. Her ARCSHA card, which that's our, or not ARCSHA, excuse me, our ABESPA card, which that's Arkansas's board for speech therapy. She had the number one on her
Love
card.
that.
Yeah, that was awesome. And so she was really a pioneer in the field. And I wonder now, I think some of those folks would still be in that academia crowd that is a little cold about embracing Fix SLP. But I will say this for some of those kinder professors that I dealt with back then that I think found intrigue with somebody who was coming from the outside. I think that they would be in that group, which you mentioned earlier. They may not agree, but they're okay with questions and they're okay engaging. And I think sometimes that's just what we want more than anything is not to be afraid to communicate, because isn't that what our profession's all about?
Yeah. And communicate and be okay to agree to disagree.
Sure.
Not end on a silent note or
Not tell me that my $250 a year is totally voluntary for my
voluntary. Yeah.
badge.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely with my clinical rotations flew under the radar. I somehow just always made it, but I'm very good on my feet. And so, and I had three clinical rotations in undergrad. So by the time I got to grad school, our clinical instructors were tough in-house and they left me alone because there were students who had no idea what they were doing. And I had already done two in-house and one school rotation. I was fine. I was independent. And I think probably I made their jobs easier, whoever was supervising me those semesters. Because I could just pick up materials and walk in and figure it out and treat. And so if I was going to class during grad school, I was definitely flying under the radar. But they didn't all hate me. That's how I ended up with a PhD. One of my professors encouraged me nonstop. And I think I've talked about this story on the podcast before. When are you getting that PhD? When are you getting that PhD? And he's the one who introduced me to my mentor. So he obviously saw something in me that I didn't necessarily was aware of at the time, because I had no interest in staying in school or going back to school. No. None. But I think that's where the turning point was for me, that I was out in the field for 3 years. I realized that I really maybe could have done a better job paying attention, that I had no idea what I was doing and had to get my act together and started to, which then led to the PhD. And so then when I went to get that PhD, I was very committed. And a lot of PhD work is independent study anyway, so I didn't have to. There was a full year of going to classes, which I did. I loved all of the classes that I took, but I also got to pick those classes. Those classes were directly related to the things I wanted to study and do, and found them to be very interesting and some life-changing, practice-changing, life-changing. Hospice and palliative care out of the nursing department, amazing. Best
Right.
course I've ever taken. So I didn't come around until my mid-20s when I went back for the third time.
Beyond academia, I want to be positive about this. That feeling of discrimination vanished once I got into the workforce. The SNF world was the great equalizer because, if anything, I found that some of my DORs were glad to have a male SLP in some of these locations because there was always that one crusty guy in the dining room, Carl, who was a veteran from a war and he was a big sports fan. He doesn't want to talk to anybody. You've got to go figure out what's wrong with Carl. He choked on something the other day and he won't visit with anybody. So I go down to the dining room and I find Carl. I sit down. He's got a very stern look on his face, like, what does this guy want? And I learned also it's not a good time to talk about sock blue in bed when you meet people like Carl. Let's get to know Carl first. And so I would sit down and say, "Hey, Carl, you've been kind of angry lately. What's going on?" And he'd look at me and I'd say, "The Razorbacks, our college team, they won last night. That's one reason to smile." And you'd see that lip kind of curl up in the corner just a little bit. And he'd finally start talking and I'd say, "Carl, what's going on? Talk to me." And do you feel like the nurses aren't doing this or this? And he finally shook his head and he said, "No, no one's listening." He said, "I'm not upset about the nurses. It's that SOB I have to sit next to in the dining room." Great. So I can move you. We moved him to one table over. A month later, the DOR and the administrator come down and they come to my desk and they said, "What did you do to Carl? He's suddenly become a model student." And I said, "I just moved him from Bill. That's all." But there was I think there was a great embrace of having a different perspective SLP in the work setting because it was seen as an asset and a tool and not something that was just different that somebody didn't want to handle. And that was a good thing because, again, that experience in college not being so great, it would have been tempting to have left the profession pretty early. But I stayed with it, other than that soiree into politics, which somehow has kept me relevant in the fixed SLP world, I suppose.
I have to wonder if you were also well received, you said because you were a male, but because, and here's my take on this as a woman, sometimes we're looked at as whining, nagging women and not always as respected as men in a medical setting. And so I do think sometimes male SLPs are more respected in medical settings simply because you're male.
I think that could be the case. I mean, that's very arguable.
I'm
I
not
would
saying it's
also,
the reason
no, I
everything,
think it's
but.
that's probably more true than untrue, although I've had my behind pinched by many a feisty little 90-year-old lady.
Love
So,
that.
there are times where I don't know that I've always had it both ways, but it happens. And I'm sure you've had it happen to your profession where you walk in and they'll say, "Hey, doctor, I need to tell you about this." Well, I am not the doctor. Let's get that clear right now. So I don't know that I've traded on it that often, except in situations with dealing with topics of sports and history and those kind of things to relate to the patients. I often felt like if a doctor that I was going to call up for something, they were either going to play ball or not. I don't know. Maybe gender did factor into it, Jeanette, but
Just something to think about.
yeah, I don't think it hurt. I could go along with that.
Especially with the patients who are coming from this very patriarchal society. Oh, the doctor said the da-da-da. Those doctors were always male. Even still
Yeah.
today, we still have our 80-year-olds, 90-year-olds
Oh, sure.
who are
That's
very the doctors. My mom is about to turn 70. I haven't talked about this story in full on why I disappeared for a little while, but my mom has breast cancer. She had surgery, got an infection. The oncologist told her she needed chemo, and well, the doctor said, so I'm going to do it. And she didn't want chemo. She told me before a chemo ever started, before she even knew she needed it, that she didn't want chemo. She's had cancer twice already. She didn't want to do it a third time. I wasn't on that phone conversation where she got the news, and I missed the first chemo appointment. Like the two things I've missed through this whole ordeal. When I said, "Mom, do you fully understand why you need this? I thought they got everything with surgery. I thought you didn't want chemo." She was mad at me. Well, the doctor said. I said, "It doesn't matter, Mom. We don't live in that world anymore. Just because the doctor said doesn't mean you have to do it. You should fully understand your plan of care, why you need this, why he's recommending it, and then have a conversation about, well, what if I don't want this? What happens to me then?" And then decide. It's not you get a call on Friday, you need chemo, and then you show up on Monday with an infection and he gives it to you anyway, and now you're in the ICU for a week and the hospital for another week. Like, that's not how this works.
I imagine you're a great patient, aren't you, Jeanette?
I'm an okay patient, but I am a great advocate for those who are
I
sick.
can tell. I
When
can tell.
my dad died, I was in that hospital. He was in the hospital for 10 weeks. And it was at the end of my dissertation, so I had the time. And man, it was not a good time for them.
Well, I'm going to ask the question that a lot of Fix SLP audience wants to know is, how is your mom?
She's doing all right. She was living with us as well, so she was in the ICU, then in the hospital. Then she lived here, which I think was a tough time for all of us. She is getting stronger. So her white blood cell count was down to 0.5. And I rushed her to the hospital. Thank goodness. I ripped her out of her home and said, "You're coming to my home." And then watched her deteriorate after another day or so. And I said, "We're going to the hospital." And she wasn't yet septic, but it was really bad. She had to go and have a debridement, and she was a mess. She was a mess. So she's getting stronger. She's at home, doing her own laundry, feeding herself. She's retired. So I've been encouraging her, you need to kind of start getting back into life a little bit. We fired that oncologist, met with a new one who has been fabulous. Man, did that oncologist model patient-centered care and shared decision-making, which is what I wish our field looked like when it came to thickening liquids. So, something to shoot for. It was great to see it in action from someone else in the medical field that educated my mom on her options. My mom made her choice, and the doctor was like, "Great, we're going to support that. I want to meet with you again in 2 weeks just to make sure that's still your decision." So, we meet with her again tomorrow. And now we're moving on to the radiation conversation. She may want to forego radiation. She might not. We're having that conversation. We're sending questions. So,
But it's patient-centered.
yeah, if she has the radiation, I might disappear for a little while longer because it's
Okay.
15 rounds over 3 weeks. So,
We'll be thinking about you. But I think a positive thing that I noticed this week is when you reached out to the Fix SLP audience about the podcast and making sure that the subscriptions it carried forward with some of the app updates, there was a groundswell of response. I still see a pretty steady amount of traffic on Pumble. This is not going away. And granted, there was going to be that big flashbang with the ASHA rate increase, but this has gained a foothold. And I think we saw that this week, and that had to be heartwarming.
yeah, it was because for me being gone for so long, really just stepped away from Fix SLP completely. At the same time, my co-founder was like, "I don't know if I need to continue with this." Very much worried about the future of what Fix SLP was going to look like, and knowing I had my work cut out for me taking over the role that was now empty and then getting caught up with the role that I was filling. I was worried. And then when I saw the subscribers go down, I had forgotten about the transfer because we put in for that transfer a while ago. And I was like, what just happened? This is falling apart. Like, what's happening? And then I remembered, oh, so I bet my Apple account is the owner of Fix SLP now. And I logged in and sure enough, there it was. And I was like, okay. And
Yeah.
then, well, I just have to reach out and ask. And
The
yeah, people,
eclipse
and
did
the
not.
other thing that you didn't see was this week, I also reached out to the AAC community to ask for help
Good.
because that was one of the projects that I was working on. I actually had a meeting with a Tobii Dynavox person the day I rushed my mom to the hospital. And so I had to cancel that meeting because I was sitting in an ER and I've not been able to circle back. And there is a lot of questions. Do we need the CCC to purchase an AAC device? The answer is no. But I still have more work to do from my end before we have some kind of call to action or whatever. So I reached out for help and I said, I need people who are passionate about AAC who will kind of like do the work kind of like they're doing in Michigan, but do it with the AAC community. I said, I need people to help me because I can't do this alone, and this is a really important topic. And people responded in droves. I
Yes.
wanted three, and I think I got 30 in the first hour. And so if you're someone who responded, I tried to respond to everybody. I just kind of took the first five or six people. I'll be meeting with them. Probably all five or six can't commit. I'd like to see it get down to three so it's more manageable. But if I need more help, I'll be reaching out. So that was a stance, sort of, that previously Fix SLP wasn't going to take volunteers, but I, as a one-woman show for now, maybe we'll get some permanent fixtures down the road, but I need to figure out how this is working for me and what needs done and what roles need to be filled, and then we'll go from there. I need help. I can't do this alone. And that's hard for me. Asking for help is really hard for me. So I took some big steps this week.
You're building a good team. That's the thing.
I
Boy, if
admitted
there
my
was,
weaknesses.
right. No, it's a lesson that we had to learn in politics is that, and I was very guilty of this. I would ride out in front of an issue and I wouldn't build my bench. I wouldn't have three or four other council people behind me on something. And that was a lonely feeling sometimes, but that's passion for you. That's part of what it is. And so you've got the AAC thing. We've got another meeting coming up in Michigan pretty soon. It's an exciting time.
Well, this seems like a good place to wrap up.
Absolutely.
Unless there's something else on your list that
No.
you want to talk about.
No.
Preston, this is great. We're going to have you back. Maybe not
Okay.
for part three. I have a couple other people that I fangirl over who are going to come on.
That's
Just because
good.
I want to hear their stories. And then hopefully Elizabeth will come on and talk about this NPR thing. So,
You're a great
and
audience.
people applied to be co-hosts. I have not ruled any of you out. No one has been excluded. I contacted one or two people and then have all these other things lined up. So I've got you in the can. And I think I had a deadline. If you want to come on and co-host, or if there's something you want to talk about, go to fixslp.com. I think I have a link there. If not, it's on social somewhere. Apply. I'll be circling back. This podcast isn't going anywhere. Eventually, hopefully I have a permanent fixture that to come on with me, but for now, apply. Get it in. If there's a deadline, I don't care.
I can't tell whether you're talking to me or the audience.
No, I'm looking at you because we're on Zoom. No,
Okay.
I'm talking to the audience.
No,
Did you?
I did turn in a I did turn in an application.
Did
And
you?
I did. Yeah.
I didn't read it.
Yeah, I did. It's short. I felt like since we had already visited, I didn't want to, ad nauseum, so I didn't put a recording or anything like that. But I wanted
No.
to be very clear as well that just I think there's a I think you're going to get a lot of great options. I think you ought to look at them. Awesome. Maybe one of those is the one you pick. I want you to know that if you go with somebody else, my work here continues as it is. So, I'm having a ball helping these folks out, and I want to keep knocking on those doors and harassing state legislators and doing my thing. I think I can add a different voice sometimes. I think I can add some different experiences and a different angle. But you could do good just having a roving band of contributors too, and I'd be happy to be one.
Okay, so let's wrap up here. Preston, we'll see you again sometime on the pod.
Absolutely.
Please give us a five-star rating and review. We don't want four. We don't want three. We want five. I normally like Hey, I'd say subscribe, but I think a lot of you already have. So I'll just say thanks for fixing it, and I'll see you guys next week.